Good morning, everybody. Thanks, Dad. We're still debating if we're bringing Bob Sr. back next year. Thank you for everyone for being here last night. I hope you had a good time. Received a lot of great feedback on Mace. I think she was off the charts. Speaking with her later, she's actually writing a children's book, which is on pre-order right now, and I bought one for my one-year-old daughter this morning at 4:45 a.m. local time. Can't wait to be jet-lagged on Friday. I did not get to thank two individuals for all their support and help to make this event possible because they got here on Saturday and were really hungover yesterday. No, they had the stomach bug, but they're back. And so Amy and Jackie, just stand up and thank you for putting this all together. Like, they both want to kill me, I can assure you, for what I put them through. But obviously, the outcome is well worth it. Couple things. Keep posting. We saw a couple this morning. Thank you for that. We want to get the word out about our event and what we're doing to be with professionals. And speaking of professionals, like, nobody stayed at the bar past 9:30 last night. So we're either really on our game or just getting really old. And more, yeah, I did see a couple come in straggling late. And then today, jam-packed. We're going to try to make it as interactive as possible. Nothing formal here. Four great sessions, two in the morning, two in the afternoon with a keynote in the beginning and at lunch. Our topics this morning are going to be HVAC and energy management, followed by the labor shortages in the trade and what we're doing to fix that. We'll have lunch with our second keynote of the day, which is an MMA fighter. A lot of people excited for that. And then the sessions in the afternoon will be navigating through the financial issues with sourcing and supply chain, and we'll wrap it up with employer expectations in 2023 and beyond. And of course, the most important and impactful part of the day is the charity event afterwards, followed by dinner. So really looking forward to seeing all the activity today. And I'm going to let Rick Sung come up here, my vice president of sales, to introduce our first keynote of the day. Rick.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. It's great to be here. Just wanted to follow up, first of all, just doubling down on Rob's opening statement, and yes, that pun was intended, that we are very happy and appreciative of you taking the time and effort to come to our first IFM Solution Summit. It's just fabulous. We can't thank you all enough. Second thing is, it was 8 years ago, I went to my very first industry show. And I was a newbie, knew nothing about retail, didn't know how much fun it was in facility management. Not a day goes by that you don't love the fact that something's going to happen. But it's a fabulous environment. It's always fast-paced and reactive and just fun to do. That being said, I went to my first event, and this gentleman, our next speaker, was the first person I saw at this event. He did a presentation that was so informative, insightful, and compelling. It's just an amazing experience that we're going to see today with Lee. 40 years in the industry, retailer, strategist, and innovative thinker. I'd like to introduce Lee Peterson with WD Partners.
Thank you.
He was the one that was there past 10.
Is this thing on?
This thing is on. Yeah. Hi, everybody. So before... That could have happened before, but... it just doesn't work. So before we get going, one thing. You know, Malcolm Gladwell was in... whatever, a movie or something like that. So Malcolm Gladwell, have you read a book by Malcolm Gladwell called Blink? Yes, you read that? So within it, he talks about 10,000 hours. And if you want to become an expert in anything, you have to put 10,000 hours in. Just for you guys, before you pull out your calculators, that's 6 days a week, at least 9 hours a day for 4 years. So then he goes on to say, you know, if you haven't done something for 10,000 hours, you're not an expert at anything. So he goes on to say that Mozart put in almost 15,000 hours before he was 9 years old, and he performed in front of the king and was deemed a genius. And Gladwell's point was, he wasn't a genius, he put in 15,000 hours worth of work on that. So the reason I'm telling you this before we start this presentation, because, you know, you get these introductions and you think, like, well, who is this guy, you know? But I had over 45,000 hours, I figured out this morning, in retail before I was 40 years old. And obviously, I'm not much closer to, you know, not too far away from 40. No, just kidding. I am. But anyways, I had 45,000 hours in retail. So I was a little bit more than an expert in that. And it was kind of at that point. And for me, those 40,000 hours involved, I'm not like a McKinsey guy that came out of that building over there and, you know, flew down, is going to give you some consultant information. I was sweeping floors. I was running registers. I was talking to customers. Became a district manager. I got promoted into the home office. I was a buyer for 12 years. I traveled the world looking at retail. And after these 45,000 hours or so, it dawned on me that the real get about retail and the end effect of what everybody in this room does, including myself, is the consumer. So the customer, and Amazon is proof of that, right? So Amazon just gave the consumer what they wanted. Their motto is to be the most consumer-centric company in the world. And they are. And so you don't know what they're going to do next. They're opening all of these stores. Then they're closing the stores. It's like, why did they open a store? Why did they close the store? They're doing all these things to find out what the customer is all about. And so that's what this presentation today is all about as well. I have some things in there to make you think in terms of like metaphors and stuff like that, but it's really about where the consumer is today and then eventually how it's going to affect everybody's job that has anything to do with retail, whether it's the end product, the countries that it's made, how it gets there, how cool the room is, you know, those types of things. It all is affected by where the consumer is moving. And as you guys know, the consumer is moving faster than ever, and it's because of technology and 10,000 other things. But to keep pace with that and to understand what they're doing is probably one of the most important things, at least in my 65,000 hours worth of, worth of retail. I think I got to work this machine, right? Or wait, a clicker. Did it move? No. Time out here, let's see. Ah, okay. I got it. I don't have 10,000 hours on that computer, by the way. So does anybody in this room know what that is? Nope. So that is, and I got it this time, it's a supernova. So we have these telescopes out there. Now we got the Webb that just went out there that's coming back with these incredible like images, and they're color images like that. This is from the Hubble when they went out there like 10 years ago and they cleaned the thing off and they did something else to it. You know, who knows? I don't have 10,000 hours in there. But they put new mirrors on it or whatever, and they came back with this image and they said, this is a supernova. And I saw that picture and I thought, wow, that's really great. And I'm one of those space geeks, I'll find out, you know, the moon on Neptune has more water or whatever. I'm going to look at that. So I'm like, what is a supernova anyway? And basically, it's a large explosion of a star that's been there for a long time that bursts into maybe new stars and new galaxies everywhere. And I'm sitting there reading the paper, and I thought, boy, that's retail in a nutshell, right? Because at one point in time, it was one thing, and now it's become a million things. And the consumer's gone right along with it. And a lot of things I thought were that have happened, which we'll talk about, were latent in that the consumer always wanted them, but we were so operations-focused. We were so focused on what we had to do that we didn't get the consumer what they wanted. So let's get going on this a little bit. Agenda, really quick, I'm going to talk about the supernova. A confluence of disruptors that really caused that supernova. And then giveaway here, I'm going to talk about getting local and how important it is. Then I'm going to give you a homework assignment called the 15-Minute City, which is like one of the coolest things that you could possibly imagine has a lot to do with probably everybody in this room, but it's a little bit more personal, but I think it's going to get to us a little bit further down the road. Commercial, 5 minutes, not even. I work for a company called WD Partners. We sort of look like this. I'm up there in that strategy ball. I came from the design ball. I invented it, and I worked in it for 15, 16 years. I don't know how many hours it is, but I worked 15, 16 years in design, and I moved to strategy after having the epiphany about consumers. But the diagram is meant to show that we all work together. So I remember when we were in design, I would always have an architect or a construction manager guy going, "You can't do that. You can't make a QSR with all glass." I was like, "Oh, darn." But anyway, we all work together, and this is a list of our clients. Many, 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 many. And there's a few that I'm sure are missing that if we had somebody here else from the company would give it to me. So, Retail Supernova. So way back when in 1999, which when I start to think about it now, it's not that long ago, right? It's not that long ago at all. I still have the same kids. I still live in the same house. You know, everything's pretty much the same. But so much has changed about everything that we do. Like, so much has changed. But that star was a bright light. Retail was a bright light for centuries. You know, the Ponte Vecchio in Florence, Italy, have you ever been to that? They say, like, that's the first mall. It was built by the Romans, like, 2,000-some years ago. So the retail's been the same. You went to wherever it was, and, you know, lately it was with a car or whatever. You got the kids in the back and everything. You go to this whole plethora of stores, and then you go shop them, and you buy one, and you come home, and that's the way it worked. And that model and everything that we did, everybody that does something for those stores and for retailers in this room dealt with that same model all the time. The logistics, every way, any way that it got there, you know, like exactly the room temperature of this store so the customers were comfortable, and the customers were the same way, just going about it and going about it. And then, boom, by 2005, it really started, the supernova really started to take hold. The whole thing really started to blow up. And I'm talking about the ways that you shop retail now, social media, live streaming, e-commerce, of course, is really huge. Direct-to-consumer, dark stores is a big thing, which we're going to talk about in a second. But stores were still there and kind of unaffected, and we got closer to the recession and stores started closing. They weren't as affected as they have been over the course of the last years, but they were still there. So stores sort of still looked like that for a while, and then boom, they started to look like this. There's showroom stores, there's pop-up stores, there's consumer to consumers. Anybody familiar with Depop? My daughter turned me on to Depop. Yeah, she's like, yeah. There was a package at the door one day. I looked at the package, and I'm like, Depop, what's that? And my daughter opens up, oh, look at this blouse, it's really perfect. She bought it from another kid for $9. And the kid posted herself in the blouse, you know, going like this, and my daughter figures she was the perfect size for it. She bought it for $9. That kid shipped it to her. So it's like the eBay for Gen Z, basically. So consumer to consumer is definitely happening, and it's not like eBay so much as it is companies like Depop. So stores really blew up as well. And what we're going to talk about first is why. So my graphic designer put together this excellent example of stores. I'm like, you know, really keep it simple. And he's like this? And I'm like, okay, you know, I guess that'll work. Stores. So e-commerce is one of the first things that happened, and really sort of took off at the beginning part of the century. But this is an older presentation. But anyway, I'm not going to spend a lot of time on e-com. So e-com has been going like this. I have another chart that shows that, you know, everybody's talking about, well, it kind of faltered, you know, after the pandemic and all that. But that's not really true. Quarter over quarter over quarter over quarter, 30%. It's over $1 trillion. The total of retail is $3.5 trillion, $3.5 to $4 trillion. So more than 25% is now e-commerce. And it's going to get bigger. And this is just a little chart. I mean, I got a couple of eye charts here. This one's from McKinsey. And this just shows you what happened during a pandemic. And this is called learned behavior, which we're going to talk about is one of the things that happened to stores as well. But you have a 35% increase in e-commerce because, hey, we were at home, right? So you bought everything from home. But that also means that people that didn't normally use e-commerce started using e-commerce. And a lot of these transitions, like what the airlines went through with their, you know, electronic tickets and everything, and you got to, you know, do your boarding pass ahead of time by yourself and go right to the plane. It takes years and years and years for consumers to get used to it. But because of the pandemic, which I feel, I'll show you in a second, but it happened so quick, and we got forced to do things so quickly. All of a sudden, you're like, well, how am I going to get this stuff? I can't go to the store. I don't want to go to the store. I don't want to put on a mask. I don't want to do all this stuff, so I'm just going to buy it by e-commerce. 35% increase. By the way, look at Amazon on there. 62% increase in 1 year. My God. And I mean, there were already hundreds of billions of dollars. But the thing about Amazon, and a lot of people diss Amazon, but really all they did was get the customer what they wanted. That's all they did. You want the product in 2 days? You want like paper towels and all that stupid stuff? You go to the grocery store, you just go, blah, blah, blah. It's at your door like in a couple of days. But that number is pretty phenomenal. So we do this questionnaire. We ask with every questionnaire we do, we always ask in the beginning of it, how will you prefer to shop going forward? So from now on. And the latest number we got on e-com is 68%. And so the inverse is 32% for stores. And we just ask them, you want to go to e-com or do you want to go to stores? Just press one button. So what's impressive about the 68%, so you're talking about more than two-thirds of everybody saying this is their preferred way to shop. Doesn't mean that they're not going to go to stores, but it does mean this is the way they'd rather shop. What's impressive about the 68% is the year before it was 52%, and the year before that it was 26%. So every year this thing is going like this. And you have to start to think about, like, what does that mean at the end of the road? Like, where is this going? Is it going to be 90%? You know, what happens to physical spaces? What do physical spaces become? And what are they going to be? What's going to draw people into stores? Here's the inverse. So e-com, that was one of the things that caused the supernova. The other thing that dawned on me, and I think this is the only true disruptor of the pandemic. Everything else accelerated. E-commerce got better. Store closures became more. You know, all kinds of things just accelerated, just really went through the roof. But work from home was a new beast. It was a new animal. And it changed everything, and it's going to change everything going forward. Not only for people and your children and the way things are done, grocery stores too probably are going to benefit from this a lot, but also in the way that we look at retail. We've already got this tremendous pressure, you know, with this e-commerce going like this on physical spaces. Now you don't have to go there at all, right? I mean, or you're working from home. So eye chart, and as I promised, the last one. But if you look at the left side is CEOs, the right side is employees, and this is about work from home. So if you look at the way CEOs thought pre-pandemic, they're thinking everybody works every day in the office, right, pre-pandemic. But look at consumers, even pre-pandemic. There's 30% of them that think, I want to be home sometimes. I'm going to start to work from home. So that message was not coming across. So in effect, the pandemic did a lot of people a big favor and started to get them to work from home. And then look at post-pandemic. It's the same thing. CEOs are still not fully getting where consumers want to be. And it's all through, like, all different sectors. So if you just look at the orange and look at the blue in this eye chart, manufacturing, construction, all these other things, and we're probably more along that bottom spectrum there. But look what it was before the pandemic and then the mentality of after the pandemic. So we're going to be working from home, and people are going to be working from home. How many in this room work from home now? Think of that. I mean, you're talking about, I don't know, I just looked at 3/4 of the people. Okay, so then this is WD research, and I'm going to talk about the vitals of the research that we did. But I have to talk about this because this has never happened to me before, and we've done tons of stuff in, you know, 55,000 hours. So we asked them, will you not go back to work 5 days a week? How many of you would not go back to work 5 days a week? 100%. And of all the research that we've done, and this is 2,700 people that match the demographics of the United States. I'll show you the income levels and all that stuff. But 2,700 people, we can get one single person that said, I want to go back to work 5 days a week. Not one person. Although I sat with somebody last night that definitely, we should have asked you, man. But anyways, 100%. And the reason I'm telling you this too is because I think you have to think about this when you interview people, you know, and when you talk to people and you understand what their issues are and, you know, all the things, kids, and oh my God. So boom, you know, retail hit from two sides. One side we never could have imagined would have happened. Everybody go home and work. What? I mean, we, you know, like 10 years ago, we couldn't even imagine to have something like that. So research, just quickly, these are geek numbers, 2,700 consumers, middle of the age bell, gender split. We kept it below like 200,000, below really 150,000 other than 10%. So you're talking about real Americans. And we also asked them, do you work in an office? So I think it's people that work in some kind of office. And obviously from some of the numbers, it could be a construction office, it could be all kinds of different places where they have to go somewhere to go to work was the question. Yes, and then that was a qualifier. If you were somebody that worked outdoors and, you know, worked for the city and worked on telephone lines, then you didn't qualify for this. So work from home. And I'm gonna talk about these two numbers here. These are our numbers that we got. How many of you were required to work from home at times? And like 2/3 of the people. So in other words, get out of here. You know, everybody get out of here. We're afraid that we're going to spread this disease, so everybody go home. That happened to me. How about anybody else? Not that many, really, compared to other people I've talked to. So now we're starting to get into this neighborhood in terms of consumers of learned behavior. Right, I like to call this like the genie got let out of the bottle. All of a sudden, you're like, "Hey, I'm at home. This is pretty nice. I didn't have to get ready to go to work. I put on a robe or something like that, and I did my work." The interesting thing about our company, we have 430 people across the globe, and I remember talking to our owner, and he was saying, "Well, this work from home thing is going to kill us. You know, we're going to have to let all these people go. Our business is going to go to crap." And our business took off. Our business hockey sticked up. And so we all still work from home. we used to use a different word. I worked for a company, maybe some of you guys remember this, called The Limited. Yeah, and they closed and would turn into L Brands and stuff like that. I worked for them for 11 years. And we used to have this expression, don't mess with love, right? And only we used a little different word there. But it was still like, if that's what the consumer really wants to do, don't mess with it. And our owner took a hold of that, and our business took off. Everybody was so happy, and we didn't miss a beat. Then, but again, it's learned behavior. So then we asked people, what percentage do you think you're going to work from home? Or how often did you work from home in 2020? So during the pandemic, how often did you work from home? And the big number that came out was 50%. Pretty much everybody. So everybody said, I work from home at least half the time. So again, the reason I'm bringing this up is because this is learned behavior. I go home, I do this stuff, I'm thinking, I really like this, blah, 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 blah. Hence the numbers at the end of that, which I showed you before. But then projected for 2023, 60% of the people said they expect to go back to work 50% at a time. So like your guys, I mean, 2 to 3 days a week, it seems like people are okay with that. 25% of the time, really, which is 1 day, maybe 2 days a week, they would go back. For us, we just do meetings and when we really need to get together and you know, leadership meetings and things like that. But otherwise, we pretty much work from home. And then back to the original question, how many of you are going to go back full-time? Zero. Zero, 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 zero. So when you're thinking about employment, again, these are numbers to consider. Like, not the less, the more, but like if you're going to do it two or three days a week, you have to have pretty good logic behind that. Because generally speaking, the public is not behind it. So the big question, you know, for us and for what we do, and I showed you the whole circle. I mean, it's everything from strategy to construction management. You know, what impact is this going to have? I mean, people are really, they're going to work from home. And as all of you know, like when you did work from home and you got a little time off, or there was two summers in there, I believe, you started walking around your neighborhood and you're like, oh my God, what is this place? I mean, it's just a bunch of houses. Like, I don't have anything here to do, but now I'm here at home and I want more things to do. And so as people that affect retail, like what do people want to do? So I quickly moved to this chart. When you go shopping in a store, first of all, we asked the question, like, are you going to shop e-com or are you going to shop in stores? So we found that out, and then we said, okay, but when you do go shopping, where are you going to go? Like, what are you going to do when you do that duty? And the good news is the 4% is a good number, because now you're thinking, well, there's hardly anybody out there that's going to go, I'm never going to stores again. That's not going to happen. People are going to go to stores again. They're just going to have to be really different. The bad news of that chart is for indoor malls to be 11%. That's a really, really low number. By the way, all 2,700 got one vote, so they only get one vote on this particular instance. And as we go on, I'll show you a different research method that we use, but it's a lot different than this. And then 37% within a three-mile radius. So in other words, you know, back to the summer thing, I'm walking around my neighborhood. There's nothing to do. There's no stores here. There's no anything. So then when we saw that 37% number, we're thinking, let's dive down and see what kind of stores or where would people actually go shopping. And then what does that mean? What does that mean for everybody in this room? Who are we going to have to service? What are these places going to look like? Or what are people going to like to do? So, you know, I could give a whole thing about the power of our neighborhood, but I think I just did. We're, you know, it's like, I don't think we've really thought about it. I don't think leadership has thought about it. I don't think in industries like ours and retail in general, nobody thought about what about those neighborhoods. If you recall, all during the last 20 or 30 years of the last century, we built these huge tracts, neighborhood tracts, and then we built malls. I remember building malls and opening stores and saying, yeah, that's a demographic mall. Sooner or later, people are going to fill in this area. Right now it's out in the boonies. So what are these neighborhoods now that we live in that we're there more often than we're not in a lot of cases? And then whatever, even if we're only home 2 days a week compared to, you know, being out of there 5 days a week, it's going to make a difference for how we shop. So we tested local concepts. And we asked them this question. If you shop in a store locally, because that's what they said they wanted to do, a large percentage of them, what would you prefer to see? What are you going to go? Where are you going to go? Like, if you're walking around your neighborhood, what would you like to see move into your neighborhood from a retail perspective that's actually going to, that you're actually going to visit? So I'm going to start low and go high. So mobile stores, which I thought, mobile stores, wow, that sounds like a really good idea. And a lot of these get a lot of press, so that's one of the reasons why we put it in there, 16%. So just so you know, the way that we do these measurements is called top two boxes. And top two boxes is asking people on a scale of 1 to 7 how they would rate it. Sixes and sevens are really high. The percentages that you're looking at there, like that 16%, is only the percentages of sixes and sevens. Are you with me? So in other words, I really like it, and I really, really like it. I'm definitely going to do it. So it's only percentages of the sixes and sevens. And for those of you that think like this, and I do, 2 out of 7 is about 27%. So we look at this as a median. So if you're not scoring over 27%, it's like, probably not a good idea. And if you don't want to invest in that, I mean, you may test it or not, but still 16% is not good. Now, experience stores, you've probably read a million things about experience stores. A store on the top is a Nike store in Soho that I think is one of the coolest things ever. You get to play a Nike employee, and basically you get the basketball at the free throw line, and there's a clock that runs, and it goes 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, right? So you play the Nike employee, and you take a shot. They take a video of it, and they send it to your email. Pretty cool. It's an experience store. But when we're asking these people, okay, in your neighborhood, would you want a cool experience store in your neighborhood? They're like, nah, not so much. You know, 16% is not good, below the average. Now we start to pop up above that, literally. And pop-up stores, you know, maybe. So if you can go into a space that's in my neighborhood and give me something brand new to look at, that sounds pretty good. That scored high. Showroom stores. And what showroom stores are is basically, anybody familiar with Bonobos? Walmart bought Bonobos. So it's an apparel store, and they have one SKU of each element out there. So small, medium, large, and a shirt size. And you come in and you say, well, I'm going to try on one of these shirts. You try on a shirt, you try on a suit, a jacket, whatever it is. They just ship it to your house. And they do it within hours. If you need it that night and you're there at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, they'll get it to you. You can wear it out that night. So it's a really good idea, and there's all kinds of algorithms and all kinds of issues about it. But Walmart bought that basically for the technology. So think about that. If Walmart starts doing showroom stores. But I think there's a great future in showroom stores because there's less labor, less cost, less build-out cost, less energy use. The real estate, I'm sure, is cheaper. Everything about it. So showroom stores, 33, that's okay. This is the one that really intrigued me, 35%. Do you remember when Walmart did the thing where they were going to come into your house and put groceries in your freezer? Do you remember that? I kept thinking, they're crazy. And I saw this number, and I was like, okay. So you guys know a little bit more than I did about it. I dove down into that number later, and I'm going to show you those stats because that, to me, was really high. I thought that would be the bottom of the barrel. I don't want people coming to my house. I mean, if a geek squad to come in and put in a TV and they pad their shoes, or the plumber comes in, you know, stuff like that, that's one thing. But I want a retailer in my refrigerator. Okay, and now we're really getting somewhere. Dark stores. And this is sort of an amazing number. So these are basically stores that have a brand name on the outside of them, but they have no windows, they have no shopping area, they have a return area like the one on the bottom. And you can go pick up stuff there or it's shipped to your house. So what that does for a retailer is speed that last mile. So now I order something, and most likely they do it by, like Amazon does it by, they merchandise their warehouses like you do a store. So if the Columbus area sells more red shoes, they have more red shoes in the Columbus area. And if Pittsburgh doesn't, they don't have red shoes. They have yellow shoes or black and yellow shoes, whatever. And that picture, just so you know, the picture on the bottom is a sketch that we actually did for Amazon. They opened four of those in the Seattle area. They got all kinds of information on them. They were so incredibly geeky about it. They're so not like retailers. They closed them all. They found out the information they wanted to, and they closed them all. But that was an Amazon store. And then the one up above is a live Walmart. So those stores really exist. But anyway, the consumers are saying, 2,700 of them are saying, sure enough, you can go ahead and put a black box somewhere in my neighborhood, as long as I don't see it, probably. I mean, you don't want one next door. But if I can drive home from work, or if I can drive from where I'm at right now, kids, I'll be right back. You go over to the store, pick up your groceries, whatever it might be, and send it back. 50%. So now you take that bell curve that I was saying that's from 1 to 7, and you slide it way over to the right with 6s and 7s. 50% of the people voted for that. So I dove down a little bit further after that, and from a qualitative sense, who are you going to buy from the most? And so they're talking about big box stores. So Walmart, Target, Costco, you know, Sam's Club, and these guys, if they had dark stores, because you buy from them so often, they do so well, that they would ship to your house immediately. And then grocery stores is the same thing, and I think we've known that one there for a while, and a lot of people are trying that now. But look at all the numbers in the 30s. those are still pretty good numbers. And department stores, Macy's is doing it. You know, department stores take note, because I think you have a chance to really service your customer like right on their front porch. And to me, this was the winner of the whole survey. And it's happening. So there's big stores, get down into my neighborhood. Come down into my neighborhood and open a store, whether it's a showroom store or, you know, a last supply store where I can go order, or I can ask questions, I can return stuff. I want you in my neighborhood. And Target has already proven that out without even knowing research like this. Before pandemic, they said that their growth model was going to be these smaller stores. They were like 30,000 square feet, and they opened up hundreds of them. They're still opening up hundreds of them, and they're in neighborhoods. So Target is way ahead of the ball game. But Nordstrom did the same thing, and Macy's is doing it now, and I think Saks, somebody else. I don't know, but they're trying smaller stores in neighborhoods is the point. And the approval from the consumer over 50% is super high. So we usually consider that number. You're close to losing money if you're not doing this already. If you get to, if half the people are saying, yeah, why don't you open a big brand store? And the winner of them all, close to 60%, was a local brand from a local store. I looked at this in two ways. Well, one of the things is, it's obvious in that, well, you know, my neighbor opened a store on a high street near my house, so I'm definitely going to go there. But the other way to look at it is, what if you are a big brand, because they want big brands down there, and you give it a sub name? So Nordstrom did that. They call their store Local, which is kind of a duh, but they opened up stores in neighborhoods, and they're really successful. Returns, e-commerce, showroom store, other services that they don't have in stores, and they're doing really well. So you can look at that, at least I do, with two ways. If I'm a big brand, they want me down there. I'm not too far from this number of being local. Why don't I act local? Why don't I start to look local? And here's the summary, start from the bottom, just so you know. So experienced stores, mobile stores, you know, maybe, I don't know if there's an opportunity there. Showroom stores, in-home service, pretty high. But the big winners are dark stores. Believe it or not, customers don't care. If they're spending 68% of their time shopping online, a dark store is really an advantage. And big brands coming in to local neighborhoods like they've never done before. They're always out on the strip. They're always in a mall somewhere where you have to get in a car. You saw the number on the malls. Not so hot about going to a mall, but I do like going to the big brand, whether it's Macy's or Target or any of those guys. So then we asked them, you're going to shop more local now? And they pretty much said, yeah, we're definitely shopping local more now than we ever have before. And we will continue to do so. So the message is, get local. And really what that means for this group, at the end of the day, is there's going to be smaller stores. There already is. I was Googling numbers yesterday or the day before, and they were talking about stores in general. Any brand that you mention is already testing smaller stores, and they're working. So instead of they just don't need the inventory. If you have 68% of the people that want to buy stuff online, and that number is hockey sticking, you don't need it in the store. So you have your best sellers there. You can ship it to somebody. But smaller stores is definitely going to mean smaller energy, less labor, easier labor, local labor. You know, everything about it is really changed. So think of smaller stores, big brands with smaller stores that you could already be working with. Have you tried that? They probably have, or at least they've thought about it and they've talked about it, because they're copycats. That's the number one rule of retail, is being a fast second. So just some things, like IKEA's doing it, Shake Shack we're working with doing it. I don't know if you've heard of Foxtrot out of Chicago. It's a great convenience store concept. Looks like that. And they're in neighborhoods. Nike's doing it. Nike's doing it with smaller stores. And Ulta, it struck me while we're doing this, Ulta has always done it. They've always been local. We've had an Ulta in our neighborhood. I have three daughters. They've always shopped there. My wife just walks over there anytime she wants to buy whatever it may be. Because a lot of that stuff is, you know, you really can't do it online. You can't tell lipstick color online, really, you know, stuff like that. Eyeliner, blah, blah, blah. So you go to an Ulta store. These guys figured it out, billions and billions of dollars. Now they're inside Target, right? Yeah. Smart, super smart. Chipotle doing dark stores. This is a restaurant. I don't know how that got in there, but Victoria's Secret is doing Victoria's Secret is doing smaller stores. This is one of my favorite Express. When we were talking about local being 57%, gave it sixes and sevens. If you're going to do something and you're going to go local, why not give it a subname? Why not give it a name like local or give it a name like edit? This, in my mind, they have the graphics on that backwards in that it should be edit by Express. You know, so you're not thinking, well, I'm going to another mall store in my neighborhood. I'm going to a local store, a store that's more local, that cares about local. And I just thought I'd put this in there. This is Atlantic Avenue in Brooklyn. And if you start to think about it, this is now the most ideal real estate. More people are staying home. More people are walking around their neighborhoods. What we've got, like here on Atlantic Avenue, is a bunch of crap. Really? You know, it's a head shop, a local jewelry store. But if you could go in there with brand names all the way throughout that, then you'd really have something. And just for S&G, I did home services because I was thinking that number 35% is a little too high. Because I think zero. And so I dove down into it, and we asked consumers three things. None, in terms of, like, would you like big brands or anybody to come into your house and perform services? None, all, or some. And so could have called this ahead of time, but about 70% of the people said, yeah, some of them, right? But the number that got me was that sevens out of this, you know, one through seven, sevens was 43%. And that number is half of what the 27 was for six and seven. So you're talking about 10, 12% would be percentages normal for seven. So those people that really want you to come in their house really want you to come in their house and take care of stuff. So I think you have to figure out who that would be that would do that, how that happens. Like, how do logistics change, right? Because now I've got a truck going around to people's houses and doing stuff. Somebody told me yesterday that they took there's a truck that goes around and takes care of dogs. Do you guys know about that? Everybody's like, yeah. There you have it. You give the dog a haircut, a shampoo, and blah, 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 and give you the dog back. You don't have to do any of that stuff. And she told me, it's like $20 more, but man, it's worth it. And I think the same thing, I guess, with going home, 43% in the very top box is super high. Okay, so I'm going to talk about the 15-minute city, and it is related. But it's a concept that an architect in Spain called Carlos Moreno came up with, I don't know, 10, 12 years ago, something like that. So it's basically this. Great geography, human needs, and everything's kind of located in one central place. My neighborhood's already kind of like that. We have schools nearby, a couple of different places that they can do. There's playgrounds, there's all kinds of things. It sort of looks like this in a circle. And if you look at all those things, most of your neighborhoods have most of those things already. We're already sitting within like little 15-minute cities. The big exception is stores. We don't have stores. We have a ladies' tennis shop in our neighborhood. Like a ladies' tennis shop is like, who's that for? You know, like 12 people. And so I took Columbus, Ohio. And in Columbus, Ohio, at one point in time, we had 8 different shopping centers. Now there's 3. The one in the upper left in Tuttle Mall is about to go out of business. Polaris had to restructure their debt, the orange one up towards the top, had to restructure their debt. They're not doing that well. So eventually, within the next 10 years, we're going to have one shopping center. So if you're a retailer, you thought, I just closed 6, 7 stores. I used to have stores in every one of these places, and now I closed them and ran out of options. What am I going to do? How about if you did 15-minute cities? I live in Upper Arlington there. It is definitely a 15-minute city. So we only have a ladies' tennis shop. We don't have anything there that where you could really go there. There's an Ulta you can walk to that's a mile and a half away. But other than that, we don't really have that. So what about an opportunity like this? Because this is an opportunity for retail to actually expand footprint and also to make stores more attractive, to increase footfalls, also to increase everything that we do in this room, to do more of it. And it just in a much different way, in a smaller way, in a different way. But it makes sense across the board, especially ecologically. So, quickie. We had double disruptors. Get local is really important. There's the 15-minute city. And I'll leave you with this, indoor malls. I'm not here to diss indoor malls, but I wouldn't put a lot of money on them right now, regardless of what you might hear from their leaders. And that's my favorite look. Like, I keep thinking, can I get a smirk like that if I had $100 billion? Right? But it's a really good statement. If you're leaning away from the future, you're leaning the wrong way. And what we're seeing is smaller stores, more local stores. So if you want the presentation, it used to be at the end here. You're going to have to ask me for it. Thank you very much. I'm glad to open up your morning. You know, Columbus has been considered a bellwether city for a long time because we have the exact same demographics as the rest of the country in one location. 1.6 million metro areas, not small, you know. And what happened to those other six malls is they turned into various things. Parks, one of them turned into a casino. another one turned into like a strip center that people come to. But I think it's just going to be an assortment of different things that those malls are actually going to turn into. Amazon, I got a call from a reporter said Amazon bought a mall and a department store in Youngstown or someplace like that. And I'm like, no, they're not going to make a mall. They're going to use it to distribute goods. And so they're using this space as like a warehouse space to get closer to stores. It's actually a huge dark store. So to answer your question, I think it's going to be a plethora of things. The park was a really good idea, by the way. Yeah. We didn't talk about it. My owner and I talk about it all the time, but we're waiting for the real estate thing with offices. And offices have to, my brother is an architect, and that's what he used to do in San Francisco. They had to let go of half their people because all they did was offices. And I'm like, why don't you do new kinds of offices? Because everybody needs a new kind of office. But I just read on the way here about somebody that's leading the way in turning offices into residential.
Yeah. Well, they did change the concept, right? Everybody's going to share space, and then COVID hit, and we can't do that anymore. So, and then big firms like your law firms and your accounting firms, they used to have 5 or 6 floors in the building, need 2 now because people can work remotely. So, something has to happen to the space.
I know. I was in New York the other week, and you come down the East River, and you look at all those buildings, and I think, wow, they're half empty, almost all of them half empty. And so they're going to have to be something. I understand that it's more difficult because now you're going to have to add plumbing. You know, you're going to have a separate HVAC, a separate hot water. It's going to be expensive, but it's obviously going to happen if people are working from home and happy about it.
I have a question about the...
Yeah, go ahead.
Sixty-eight,
yeah. Yeah, I think really at the end of the day, it's about digital retail integration. You need to make the stores as easy as that, as easy as it is to shop online. And I think that, you know, the other, so there's some obvious things too, like we have to give somebody an incentive to go to a store, I think is the huge thing. I know some companies now are doing, but I don't know that this is going to work, but they're doing special promotions in stores only. You know, and so that's one way you could say, like, you can get this, but you got to go to a local store. I think that the avalanche is so strong that at the end of the day, everything that you just talked about, you know, the additional sales, the sometimes friendly customer service and all that stuff is going to be less. It's just going to be less. And, you know, no matter how you look at it, customers want to shop online. So they understand that they will get less customer service. They will not buy something extra that they don't want to buy, although they're pretty good, getting pretty good with the algorithms of that. And so to me, it's just a changing marketplace. You need to make the stores different. You need to make them better. You need to do everything you can to get them there. But consumers are not going to go there as much as they used to. They're just not going to. And so the real idea is, you know, the idea of focus, right? So where should I put I got 10 bucks here. Where should I put $9 of my 10 bucks? I'm going to put it in the e-commerce. Or something like that. Showroom stores, which is also kind of an e-commerce.
What geography was the study in? Is it in Columbus? 2,700 people?
United States. So if, I don't remember what the number is, but if the West region was 27%, 27% of the 2,700 were from the West. So it was across the board. We have numbers on each one of those. We have numbers on race. We have numbers on all that stuff. But usually a lot of these presentations, I got like 25 minutes. Anybody else? Well, it's been fun. Thank you.